Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peterson Toscano. Welcome to episode 41 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This show is airing on Saturday, October 26, 2019. In the Art House, you will meet a group of circus artists. They get in an old ship and into the water to engage the public about climate change. Our puzzler question is about systems change. But first, I get to share some good news. Founded in 1881, Tuskegee University is an historically black university in Alabama. Since the early work of George Washington Carver, Tuskegee has trained generations of researchers who have been unraveling the mysteries in the natural world. Dr. Carver famously said, quote, "I love to think of nature as an unlimited broadcasting station through which God speaks to us every hour, if we will only tune in," end quote. Two researchers from Tuskegee have been tuning in and have made a series of extraordinary discoveries. These they found in agricultural waste. Out of the muck, they discovered a natural alternative to plastics, one that will biodegrade in less than 100 days. As you are about to hear, though, they discovered this material also has other extraordinary properties that can potentially help us in taking on carbon dioxide pollution. Meet Dr. Donald White. Originally from Richmond, California, as a boy, Dr. White discovered his love for science.
I got into it in elementary. There's the Lawrence Hall of Science in Berkeley, right up the hill from UC Berkeley. And we went there on a field trip. And I think they were doing a dinosaur exhibit at the time. I mean, that place is like a playground. I mean, it was absolutely great. And I mean, it just took me over. I had never been to a place like that before that, and it just really took me into the sciences. So initially, it was everything scientific, right? So chemistries, the biologies, I like physics, astronomy, all of it, environmental science, all of it. But it got more specialized as I got older.
Dr. White specializes in chemistry. He received most of his scientific training from Tuskegee University, and just this fall received his PhD. He, along with a team of other researchers, dove deep into the world of food waste to explore the many potential uses of cellulose.
With all of this food production, you have food waste because that food has a shelf life, right? And so you have this agricultural waste in hundreds, if not hundreds of millions of metric tons every single year. And that's per country. I mean, it's just crazy how much ag waste we're producing. These things actually produce methane gas, they produce carbon dioxide, you know, as they biodegrade. But also, there are some structural components to the plants, like cellulose. So we extract the cellulose from the plants, and then we use it. It's all about tunability, so we can change the surface chemistry. Depending on the type of property we are looking for, we can actually tune the nanocellulose or our nanomaterial for a bunch of different uses, right? It's abundant, relatively easy to work with, and it's really strong, which is great. Plants use it as that rigid component. It has all different types of abilities, optical abilities. I mean, the list goes on and on. This stuff is awesome.
Dr. White and a team of researchers wondered if they could use cellulose along with plastics or as an alternative altogether. Dr. White's advisor, Dr. Michael L. Curry, explains.
Petroleum-based plastics, or what we call man-made plastics, we don't have the necessary enzymes in the soil to break these plastics down on a fast enough time scale. And so they end up hanging around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. As they break down, of course, they pollute our atmosphere. We were investigating how to take a natural product from Mother Nature and make a bio-based plastic that in turn would biodegrade in less than 100 days. But at the same time, wouldn't emit all these toxic gases, greenhouse gases, what they call them, into the atmosphere. We were very successful in making this bio-based plastic.
This new use of cellulose models responsible design. Here's Dr. White.
A lot of times, things aren't made with end-of-life perspective, you know, in the fabrication process. It's like, oh, this thing is really, It's really strong. It's really cheap to make. Let's go ahead and make a ton of it. Once a ton of it is made, oops, by the way, it's bad for the environment because it won't break down.
Now, if they only discovered a true bio-based material as a replacement for petroleum-based plastic, that would be enough cause for celebration. But when scientists unearth something like this, they do further research.
Once we make one discovery, we look further down the road and try to figure out, okay, it can do this process, but can it do Y and Z? And so we try to capitalize on materials as much as possible.
And this is when their discovery becomes even more extraordinary. Turns out this naturally formed cellulose can do some pretty amazing things. The Curry team discovered a natural, truly biodegradable alternative to petroleum-based plastics. But wait, there's more. Here's Dr. White.
Without giving too much away, right, because we're going for a patent on this technology, one of the things that we noticed after treating the cellulose, it actually started to sequester carbon dioxide out of the air. And so now we can actually grab that carbon dioxide out of the air and we can extract it from the cellulose and repurpose it for different uses.
Here's Dr. Curry.
But once it goes through the process that we have discovered for that particular material, immediately when you expose it to ambient conditions, it starts to capture carbon dioxide, CO2.
Wait, there's still more. Dr. Curry explains how Dr. White discovered something further.
And then it holds it there until we place it in a medium that where it will release. So for instance, we can place this back into water and it will immediately release that CO2 into water without any influence from the outside, which could be very useful for agriculture because, as you know, agriculture, plant growth depends a lot on CO2.
Cellulose is the gift that keeps on giving.
You have this material, you can modify it, it can capture CO2 and deliver nutrients. I mean, you kind of have a win-win there.
The Curry team will continue to research cellulose and will get input from other scientists. Dr. White understands there are ethical matters that must be considered when introducing new technology, even if it's based in nature. For instance, the natural substance of asbestos served a great function as a building material. It turned out to also cause lung cancer and other diseases.
Yeah, people are right to be scared because you never really know what's going to happen. It's like technology with asbestos, right? It was strong. It was super thermally stable. You know, it was a great material. It was the new wonder material. Oh, but by the way, it's causing disease, right? They were using it for like flame retardants and all of this kind of stuff. And it was like, okay, now we got to get rid of the asbestos. There needs to be a couple of safety nets put in place to where, you know, you have a technology and then you have a certain amount of research being done. And I think that the scientific community does a pretty good job at that. A technology is highly scrutinized. So even if you're going for patent, there are scientists on the other end looking at the data, looking at the information, looking at other data that's been published and comparing it. Our peers do a really good job with actually scrutinizing the information.
Well, there is strong incentive to develop solutions that will address our growing climate change problems. Dr. White is aware greed can push products into the public before proper scrutiny.
The problem, I think, really comes from, like, can we make a whole lot of money off of this? You know, you got a business guy come in, doesn't really understand the science. They kind of fund this thing. It's like, hey, hold on. Ethics definitely comes into play there.
This is groundbreaking stuff. So I asked Dr. White, is there a Nobel Prize in your future?
So I hope. It's always been a dream, and this is kind of crazy that I win the Nobel Prize in chemistry, right? I mean, you got to be like extremely lucky to win the Nobel Prize. I mean, of course, you got to be smart and, you know, disciplined, but I can only pray that, you know, one day we win the Nobel Prize. Man, I don't know. I'd probably cry.
These discoveries by the Curry team seem downright miraculous, like from another world. In fact, I began to get suspicious. It sounded almost too good to be true. So as a serious journalist, I confronted Dr. White and asked point blank, Is it possible that you're really from Wakanda, the super advanced hidden kingdom in sub-Saharan Africa? Sure, Marvel Comics makes it look so fictional, but the Black Panther comics and movie reveal some pretty amazing Wakandan technology.
No. I wish. No, I'm just a kid from Richmond, California, graduated from John F. Kennedy High School on Cutting Boulevard, the south side of Richmond. And I've been there until I came here to go to college. And I'm not from Wakanda. I'm from Richmond.
No, there is no otherworldly magic here. Just good hard work conducted by dedicated and disciplined scientists looking for solutions.
There's really good science being done. I mean, you know, you got people out there coming up with, myself included, coming up with some real life solutions to some hard problems.
Drs. Curry and White continue in the tradition of George Washington Carver and the many curious, well-trained, and highly skilled researchers that have come out of Tuskegee University.
You know, I'm thankful for this platform to show the science that we've been doing in our lab. I mean, you know, we spend a lot of late nights in here. I spend a lot of late nights in here. And it's really cool to actually have an opportunity to say, hey, you know, we're doing this and it's really cool. We can talk about it. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we have some solutions and some options. I think the people need to know that we are definitely working diligently to solve some of these hard problems.
So I want my research to do more than what it was intended to do. I wanted to be able to expand out into the world and be a symbol for diversity, be a symbol for clean living, be a symbol for what we can accomplish as a nation when we put our minds to it. What really inspires me now is that the legacy of George Washington Carver, the legacy that he left behind, how he changed the world. Just from his research, he was able to impact diversity, impact communities, impact health. He impacted and opened doors for other minorities and even other scientists.
To learn more about the work Dr. Donald White and Dr. Michael L. Curry and their team are doing, visit our show notes. I have links and much more. You can find the show notes at citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Select Citizens Climate Radio on the menu to the right, then go to episode 41. That address again, citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Now it is time for the Art House. One troupe of performers in Northern Europe decided to break out of the box altogether. In the summer of 2019, they performed a performance piece in Norway and Denmark. Instead of bringing the audience into a theater, Acting for Climate took their show to 8 different harbors. For a stage, they used a very large boat.
34 meters long, 26 meters tall.
To give you some perspective, the mast is about as high as an 8-story building.
It's a huge wooden sailship built in 1935. It was used as an ice transport ship between Norway and Sweden.
Two members of Acting for Climate join us today to tell us about their historic performances.
My name is Abigail Rytun Vinsvold, and in Norwegian you would say Abigail Rytun Vinsvold.
My name is Nathan Biggs Pinton.
Acting for Climate is an art collective working on combining environmentalism and performing arts. Our goal is to inspire people and other artists to work on climate change, environmentalism, or sustainability in their artistic work.
Up until now, Acting for Climate offered workshops to other artists to deepen their skills in communicating climate change. But over a year ago, they had an idea for a really big project.
The performance Into the Water. We did the performance on the ship, but we also did festivals in the bigger harbors where we invited other artists and activists and climate researchers to come and join in and do different activities around climate and creativity.
The project draws on circus arts and so much more. Both Abigail and Nathan have been trained in the circus arts. Abigail also studied dance and theater. She has a lot of experience performing outside traditional theater spaces.
I grew up doing theater in Norway's oldest street theater company, Stella Polaris. So I kind of grew up doing theater out on the streets and out in nature. That's also where I started combining acrobatics with performing arts and getting introduced to the different circus disciplines.
Nathan found his way to circus arts through juggling.
12 years old when I started juggling. I always did a lot of sports and things and always changed what I've done. And I still, even now, have a hard time sticking with something, except for juggling. I've been juggling for 12 years and pretty nonstop. Haven't often doubted that I wanted to keep juggling forever.
For the Into the Water performance, they needed a full troupe of performers with multiple skills.
In Acting for Climate, we're 6 artists. 5 circus artists and 1 physical actor. And then we had a musician joining us for the tour who was live composing and doing the music for the whole performance.
In addition to the performers, the boat had its own crew. Up to 28 people lived on the boat as they traveled to 8 different harbors over 3 months. They did more than just perform a show, though. They created multiple opportunities to engage a community over several days at a time.
So we arrive in port with this beautiful ship, which is already a message in itself. And we arrive with this circus show that is about climate. And we also hold a festival during the few days that we're in harbor with speeches and workshops on how to be sustainable. And so it's really to connect people in the communities there and to also build on the things that we believe in.
The centerpiece of their community engagement was their boat.
The whole show takes place on the deck of this wooden sailboat, and the audience is sitting on the docks. Our abilities as circus artists to move through a space and to use space in a different way helps bring the abstract image that we want of maybe we're talking about how we're being blind to plastic. Maybe we're talking about how we need to be more sensitive to the things around us. Maybe it can be many things that the audience can see through this that circus helps create.
The highlight of their engagement was the Into the Water performance on this boat, on the shore, over the water, and at times even in the water. But first, they had to attract an audience.
For some of the harbors, there was a lot of people passing, so it was working as a attraction, a bit like in the street show when you gather people, and also an introduction to what was going to happen in the show, where we tried to tune the audience into that we're going to talk about climate here. First act starts with that we all present ourselves, then we do our circus disciplines, but really deconnected. And it's kind of messy. And then we have this loop or this music going, saying that we are acting for climate.
Out of this circus chaos, a character emerges.
He comes out of the ship wearing a bathrobe and carrying a maybe hotel care package, looking for the spa.
Yeah, going into a small bathtub and then sitting there. He realizes there's some seaweed in his bathtub, which he totally freaks out about because it's some nature, you know? It's crazy. He can't be in contact with that.
So we can follow this character who is a bit more approachable as he struggles with finding ways to go through. And so we can follow him kind of navigate through this world of people doing strange things.
The focus then shifts to the land as a performer does an act on the ground right in the midst of the audience.
We have this kind of chaos of not having a focus point, so then we create a focus point of these handstands actually in the middle of the audience.
She goes out from the ship and does a handstand act in the middle of the audience, more representing the earth and the calmness, or a bit opposition to what just happened on the ship.
And then when the audience turns back towards the ship after the ship has changed and has suddenly big balloons that say acting for climate in big gold letters and some flags around, and we're all decked out to have a party with these Hawaiian flowers. And so the audience turns from this beautiful handstand act and suddenly finds the ship decorated for the party, and we are clapping and celebrating for the handstand act and how amazing it was.
We have party hats and costumes and drinks.
Start these speeches about how we're doing such a great job for climate and how things can be and what we can go for as we have this juxtaposition with what we are actually doing on stage and what you see.
That we're all like saying we're going to do something about the climate, but then we are just acting like if it's nothing is happening. Where I'm saying that we all should act for climate and we should do things. We should reach the 2-degree target. Or actually, we should reach the 1.5-degree target. We should save the polar bears. And then we go on until it gets totally absurd, where I'm just saying rambling stuff like green, we need green economy and green cars and green buses and green shoes and green trees and like going totally just weird.
Then this party on the boat gets wild.
And we have a water pump and we start a water party and slide around and then it escalates and escalates until the audience has this uncomfortable feeling and we have an uncomfortable feeling of not wanting to do this because it's against our morals, but it creates a tension that is really important because then it breaks.
Emma goes up in the trapeze and does some crazy stuff in the trapeze and we continue swinging her until it and throwing food at her until it goes too crazy so she falls into the water.
Yes, it is a shocking moment when she falls. We actually have a big beam, which is called the gaff of the ship, that we can swing with a rope back and forth, one over the land above the audience, and then one over the water on the other side of the ship. And Emma's trapeze is hanging from this big beam that we're swinging back and forth, that she starts off enjoying the fact that she's on the swing, and she gets swung more and more, and we're throwing food in the air at each other and at her, and she's screaming for us to stop, 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 and finally, boom, she falls into the water and everything breaks.
It totally looks like it wasn't planned. Often also I hear the comments from the audience at this moment. We're pretty close to them. And often I hear like, was she meant to fall? Because it's been so crazy just before, and she's really swinging with the boom. So the whole rig, we're moving the whole rig of the ship.
Half of the audience is really excited because they're like, wow, circus, cool. And they're clapping and they're very excited for what we've just done. And half of the audience is completely silent, uncomfortable, and confused as to what we are doing and how this relates to climate change and why this circus boat talking about climate is making everyone so uncomfortable.
So we all fall down. So the ship becomes totally empty. So from being this crazy party where we're going too wild and too much, it goes completely silent and nobody's visible.
So you have this emptiness on the ship after all of this noise and chaos and tension.
And then we slowly get up one by one and now we're blinded. We walk in with our eyes closed. We walk around balancing on the ship, searching with our senses.
Unseen, Emma swims to the back of the boat to reemerge in a different form.
She's got herself up on the ship and comes into the middle of the ship. She appears from behind the kitchen. Then she has a lot of plastic all over.
It's hanging several feet behind her and is covering her face and covering her shoulders and around her arms.
It's actually pretty beautiful, but when she comes out, she's like tangled into it. So she has plastic over her head and over her body. And then she walks like us with closed eyes towards the front of the ship, towards the audience. And then she finds her way up to one of the shrouds. There's like this ladder looking things on the side of the ship that goes up to the mast. So she can climb up halfway up the mast where I'm sitting already. There we're hoisting her. So she walks vertically up the whole mast with this huge plastic dress hanging down after her. She gets all the way on the top of the top mast and then she walks across from the one mast to the other mast. So this ship is a huge ship which has two big wooden masts, 26 meters up there. So it's pretty spectacular to see a person going 26 meters up and then walking across from one mast to the other, and then she walks all the way down again. And then they stand there holding their hands up towards Emma while she's coming down. They grab her and it ends in a beautiful hug where they were all kind of showing that we're sorry that it went too far and we're sorry that she fell into the water, and now we want to figure out how we can deal with this and go further with a different energy.
And we stand on top of each other in a pyramid out facing towards the future.
The show ends, but the engagement with the public continues. Throughout the performance, dirty water had been purified through a contraption on the deck. The troupe then invites the audience to help transfer this water and return it to the ocean. The performers also meet with audience members to hear their reactions.
One girl we met in Fredrikstad, she came back all 3 days we were there just because she was so excited about the show and she just needed to see it again. And she brought her family the next days and her friends. People came up to us and said that they were really, really touched. And even 60-year-old men, which I don't normally see crying, I barely have seen anyone that I don't know crying in this age group. And then they came up to us and said, wow, I'm really touched. I'm just gonna go take a walk and cry for myself right now. That was really touching for us to hear that people were, yeah, touched by the performance, not only excited, but also shaken a bit somehow.
Just hearing Abigail and Nathan describe the show without even seeing it, I'm deeply moved. They take on a big issue and they do it in a really big way. I encourage you to check out the Acting for Climate website. You will see video from Into the Water and get to know the troupe better. Visit actingforclimate.com. That's actingforclimate.com. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. Now should be the time for our monthly puzzler question, but our show is very full and we're nearly out of time. So instead, I will repeat last month's puzzler question. Here goes. After attending the recent climate strikes, you ran into your cousin, Kristen. She saw news reports about events around the world. She tells you, I love that sign, system change, not climate change. But it seems like a total fantasy, right? What, do they expect everyone to go vegan or something? What exactly does it mean? What systems can we change that will make any difference with climate change? Kristen needs some help in visiting the kind of change you are pursuing. How would you answer, Kristen? Submit your answers, leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. Get back to me by November 15th, 2019. You can email those answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Or leave a voicemail message of 3 minutes or less at the following number, 518-595-9414, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. We have come to the end of another episode of Citizens Climate Radio. The show is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Para. All of the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Please share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. You get the idea. We're like everywhere. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. You could also join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/Citizens Climate Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Citizens C Radio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, at Citizens C Radio. And feel free to tweet at me directly at P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guest. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.